Good morning, everyone. When I woke up this morning, I have a habit on the day that I'm going to be giving a service of reading the reading, and then I sit down and I pray first, and then I meditate. And my prayers tend to be long, rambling, I'll call them discussions with God. I'm sure many of you, I can hear from the laughter already, you're not surprised to hear that my prayers are long and rambling. It's actually, though, a very beautiful time for me, and then I meditate trying to hear what guidance I'm going to be given. But today, while I was talking to God, two things came to me that I wanted to share to begin with. The first is that I remembered that I came into this world in this life, this time, in what I've always thought of as a very kind of usual circumstance. I listen to people talk all the time about how they were born and they knew instantly that there was something more to life, and they set out even as young people, and they were searching for it. That wasn't me. It's one thing when you hear somebody like Swami Kriyananda, who tells us right in his book, The Path, that he was having these super conscious dreams as a child, and then he would have to sort of get back into his body and himself and live. But many people I've known, I'm sure many of you, have either told me or your truth is that you knew right away. But I didn't really know anything. I just was living life, and as I said, the word usual doesn't sound great, but it's really how I always thought of myself, sort of right at the norm of how people come in and live. I came in with a big heart, so that helped me. I came in somehow knowing how to love, both to give love and receive love. And I just acted through experience on that. So it opened up a world to me. But I had no idea that there was anything I was to be looking for or searching for anything greater than what I knew was happening. And the other thing that came to me in the prayer was a really, because I wanted to share today some experiences that I've had in life later, subsequent to that childhood, and really a large part of the first half of this life, almost. I wanted to share some stories, and they're phenomenal. They're about God's greatness, certainly not my own, which is why it came to me at the beginning about how kind of regular I was. And I was saying to God, please help this talk unfold in a way that I can share these stories and that what they will feel is your greatness, the greatness of the divine, as it's living in every atom on earth, very much like that wonderful reading that Christina did that really went right to the core of it, about that realization of the reflection of the divine consciousness in every particle on earth. That, and those were, I don't remember the words, but they were close to those words. But that realization of the divine consciousness manifesting in every particle on earth, at the heart of every particle, dwelling in every particle on earth, is really ultimately what we call Christ consciousness. It is what the avatar is. It is what the only thing that separates them from us is that realization. There's nothing that separates us in terms of truth. Truth is truth. That divine consciousness is every particle of our being, and every particle of the being, not just of everyone around us, but of everything around us. But they have come not just to know it, but they have come to realize it, and they live in terms of that. And our goal is to be able to realize it in the same way. And very much as our reading said, and I just wanted to be able to read it again, it says many times in the history of all religions, really, has God appeared in response to the loving call of his devotees. And that is so beautiful, that it's our call, and I'll talk about this more in a little bit, but it's us that calls the divine to earth. But then Krishna states, unborn, changeless, Lord of creation and controller of my cosmic nature, though I am. And I'll explain this, and these words are hard to follow. Yet on entering nature, I am dressed in the cosmic garment of my own Maya. He says, I will appear. He says, unborn, changeless, Lord of creation. Yet when I appear, I'm dressed in the cosmic garment of my own creation, which means delusion. So we are blessed with these avatars. They don't just come to us with everything they can do every once in a while. Yogananda would start to fall and say to somebody, they would grab him, and he said, I'm in so many bodies at once, I forget which one I have to hold up. Well, you hear that. What does that mean? That doesn't mean as much to us. It sounds good, probably a little hard for most of us to relate to be in so many bodies at once. But it's very different because they come looking so much like us. They come in what he called the cosmic garment of my own creation. They come in human bodies, and they go through so many experiences like we do, out of pure love for us to show us the way. Yogananda came, the first story we hear about him coming to America is that he couldn't get a passport. Now, who's gone through any issue like that with the government? You can't get a passport. He had no money. He didn't speak a word of English. He had to stand up and give a talk, and he was speechless for 5 minutes. We can all relate to that. Many of us, we've been there. So they come and they say, I'm going to take form like you, and I'm going to show you how to make your way through those moments that are terrifying. You don't know what to say. You are whatever all of the reasons that we experience fear. Your taxes are overdue. You don't know where your rent's going to come from next month. All of the things that confront us. How many times did Yogananda have a bill to pay? Really, even to buy Mount Washington and have no idea where the money would come from. So they take these forms out of such just deep and pure love. Master says it in his poem, God's Boatman, if even one soul is left by the side of the road, I will incarnate. In so many of the songs, and I was just thinking about it when we were in Israel, and forgive me while I get the words because I'm so bad at remembering them, but the song God is Truth, God is Love, Mother, Father, Friend are One. When our hearts cry out in pain, Mother, bring us peace again. And that's what God does. It's our soul call that brings them to earth. And last week, I was we had this beautiful meditation on Mary. We did a two-hour meditation at our community one morning. And I just realized that we had to hold that in some way for people who attended that meditation. So I sat there for a few moments. I thought, what was it about Mary that allowed her, that she needed to be the bearer of God on earth in this incarnation? Because those are the qualities, those are exactly the qualities that we need to call to the divine to say, now I'm really serious. I really want this to happen. I want to feel your presence, just like you're showing us. And I thought and started to speak about it. First, she had to be receptive. She had to be willing to receive the divine. She had to be willing to hear so that Gabriel could even come to her. If there was no willingness, no receptivity on her part, how could that have happened? And after the receptivity, she had to be willing. We see all of these artists' recreations of her in that moment where you see that look on her face. It's sort of like, really? You're asking me to bring, to manifest a divine creation, which I'm saying right now is not really different than what we're all being asked to do. We are being asked to realize our own divine potential. We're being asked to know that we are all potential avatars. That's who we are. We are already avatars. All we need to do, as Yogananda said, is improve our knowing by being receptive, by being willing, by being courageous, by being strong, by hanging in there when it gets rough, because of course it will get rough. And the deeper we go on the path, the harder that it will be. But as soon as we manifest those qualities, as soon as the disciple is ready, the Gita says to us, the guru will come, God will come. And that is what happened with Yogananda. Some of the stories that I wanted to share with you, because these are the stories that wake us up. These are the stories that say, remember my prayer this morning, not certainly not my greatness, but not even just your greatness, but our greatness. How do we wake up to the fact that we have this potential? We all know about the story on page 8 to 9 of the autobiography of a yogi. It's an extraordinary story. It's a real story. Paramahansa Yogananda's father, Bhagavati, had a high position with the railroad. One of his employees comes to him and says, please give me a week off. I need to go and see my guru. And Bhagavati looks at him and says, what are you doing, becoming a religious fanatic? Those were his words. If you want to get ahead, he says, stay here and work harder. And the devotee of Lahiri Mahashaya, who was the guru, falls to the ground and starts sobbing. Lahiri, I can't live without seeing you. I can't live without seeing you. And in that moment, so I don't know what year this was, but it was in the 1800s, later in the 1800s, all by way of saying real records, witnesses, right, for us, Lahiri Mahashaya takes form right in the middle of this field in India. And he says to Yogananda's father, Bhagavati, you're being too hard on your employee. And he disappears. He appeared, took human form, and he disappears. Now, when we read that story, I don't know how many of you, but many, many people have said to me, I closed the book. I couldn't read any more of the book. I wasn't going to believe it after that. That's a very hard story to take in. Very hard story. I've had two experiences that I think many of you have heard, but I want to share them again because they're so meaningful here, and they bring it, they make it real. There's an outcome that we can relate to that says God exists in form other than what you think, and he exists in you. Many years ago, late at night one night, I was driving from Redwood City over to Oakland to see the man who was my spiritual teacher at that time. Sankeshava Das was his name. And probably everybody in this room has been on Route 880. It's a nightmare. And it's seven lanes of traffic, and it's always full. And I was driving my car. This, by the way, along with many, many other stories of these miracles that bring us into closer reality with these truths. This is on our way to the realization of divine consciousness existing everywhere at every moment. Is in Asha's book, Loved and Protected. It's really a book worth reading because when you read it and you read those stories and they're happening to all of us, the book, it's our stories where God has shown us more than what we think is happening here. Anyway, right in front of me, this huge accident happens. And there's like four cars involved. We're all driving 70 to 80 miles an hour. And this car starts heading the wrong way, coming at me, one of the women who was hit, till I can see her eyes. This is true, I can still see her eyes. The terror in her eyes. And it happens in a split second. And in a moment, I was on the other side of the accident. I was still on 880, heading north. That woman was coming right towards me. And I was lifted up and put on the other side of an accident. It was impossible. It couldn't have happened. It left me deeply shaken. But you can't easily pull over on 880. So I continue on my way. I get to the house. I open the door. And Sankeshava Das himself opens the door. Very unusual. He says to me, that was a close call, wasn't it, Mother? Just like that. I was on 880. He was in Oakland. How do we make sense of that? Close call, he says. I mean, obviously, he knew exactly what had happened. At the moment, I was too shaken. It was all otherworldly to me. But then you start saying, how is that? How was he in both of those places? How did he come? Not even just that he saved me, but he was sitting in Oakland, and yet he knew exactly what happened. Divine consciousness at the heart of every atom of creation. You think that's the only place God was in that moment? Of course not. There were miracles going on all over creation, because that's the simple truth, if you will. Many of you have heard me tell this story of praying one night, very hard in front of my altar for my niece, who I love very dearly, who I was very connected to, deeply connected to. But interestingly, we had been in an argument. It was a big argument. We hadn't spoken in 3 years. True story. I sit down at my altar, hold my hands up. Master, you have to take care of her. Please, you have to take care of her. 45 minutes later, I open my eyes as if a moment had passed. I didn't even think really twice about that. I thought, oh, great meditation. I've had them before. The next morning, she writes to me, "You won't believe what happened," she says. "And it was not a dream," she tells me. "Nobody will believe me." I write her back, "I'll believe you." She said, "You came to me and you picked me up and you held me in your arms. You took me out of bed and you took me downstairs." Some of you remember, she said to me, "You were holding me too tightly. It was too much. I wanted to say to you, Aunt Sal, put me down." She said, "But I knew in that moment, this is a woman who is an avowed atheist. I knew in that moment I was feeling more love," she said to me, "than I would ever feel again." Now, it wasn't my love. That's not what happened. I couldn't go to Virginia right now. It would take me 6 hours to get there, right? Make the reservations. I shouldn't say I can't go there. Of course, I can go there. Just proved that last 2 weeks ago. But it's not about that. It's about divine consciousness being everywhere, in every moment. It's about these great souls who greater can no love be than this, from a life of infinite joy and freedom in God, willingly to embrace limitation, pain, and death for the salvation of mankind. Such ever has been the promise of the great masters for the world. We say that every week in our festival, and that is precisely what they do. Each one of those, yesterday we were up at the village at a minister's retreat, and Joe Tisch was giving a talk, and it was so beautiful. And he said, every avatar that comes with a mission. They come at a particular time, in a particular way, for those particular people. And he went on to talk about some of what Yogananda's mission is. But you know, this morning when I was sitting in front of my altar, I thought to myself, Jesus came. I mean, all of them have come. Everyone on this altar and so many more. They have reincarnated for us, just to show us, look at this. I will even teach you how to pray to me. I will write a book so that you know how to pray. And I thought, Jesus came at a different time than Master. Joe Tisch wasn't talking about him yesterday. But for the first time, I had the thought, probably just being in Israel, probably just walking the Stations of the Cross. I didn't know about the Stations of the Cross all my life. I had no idea what it was. But I said to myself, he carried that cross. It's a long distance. He carried the cross. What is the cross in a way? That cross says to us, look, this can be hard work. You pick this up, this path to get to this divine incarnation and then reincarnation. And look, at the end of it all, I'm going to show you. You can put me in a cave. You can put rocks there. I'll just leave the cave and come back. You can think about it for the next couple of thousand years, but this is what I'm going to do. It wasn't about him. That's what he did. That's a true story. But he carried that cross. How many times did he fall? He had to go to Veronica and have the sweat wiped from his face. He had to stop and greet his mother and say to his mother, "I'm fine. I'll be okay." Watching him go through this horrible scene. I mean, when you think of it, God himself, I don't know about any of you, but every time I read the story of Jesus being slapped across the face, It just, I can barely read it. And it just hit me this morning what those stations of the cross were, how he was showing us, really, this is what's going to happen. You will all have your own crosses to bear. So what? Bear them. It's not easy. You know, there's a wonderful story. I've heard it several times, often in relation to this reading, though I've never told it, because it's perfect for this. It's about a family who's with their children and finds two, what's called a chrysalis. I don't know how you say that in plural, so that's how I'm saying it. Two of what one is called a chrysalis. And they take them and they observe them. And this is where the caterpillar has built what for us is like a veil of delusion, that which surrounds it, from which it needs to get free to be able to fly. It's just the delusion that we have. It's the same thing as a veil. And they watched the first caterpillar. It's called a metamorphosis. And it's just what it is. This is the story of our soul. They see it start wiggling. We've all seen them. They hang from a branch of a tree. That's what the caterpillar does. It builds this protection. And then it gets too tight. It's time to evolve. Starts wiggling, and it starts chewing a hole in the top of the chrysalis. It is a lot of work for the caterpillar. And they were watching it, and they said, as it chews this hole, and it's changing, literally, into a butterfly, it took hours. And then this butterfly breaks out, they describe this, and it gets itself to a little branch, and it sits there like, ah, that was hard. Then all of a sudden, it spreads its wings and it flies away. A beautiful butterfly, free at last, transformed from that which was encased to that which is free. So they watch the second one start to wiggle, get ready to go through the same very painful to watch process. So they take a knife and they cut the hole in the top. They're going to make it easy, right? What did Jesus say? Jesus said, I came not to bring peace. I came to bring a sword, right? It's not a sword that kills people. It's the sword that helps us through. This is what we have to do. We have to work hard. That butterfly made it out very easily. No problem. Way easier for the observer. Got to the tree but couldn't fly and died. Why? Because in the struggle, in that very struggle to be free, it takes all of the liquid out of the wings. They have a process so that those wings are dry and can actually lift the butterfly. So none of these avatars say to us, this is going to be easy. Of course not. But they all say to us in one way after another after another, look at this, Shanti. You want to pray? I'm going to show you. Look at the power of prayer. Look at what happens when you sit still with all of that devotion. It's that devotion that's freeing. We don't have to know anything. I sat down and said, please help her. Please watch over her. That's all I knew to do. Really, I mean it. This was not that long ago. I know a little more about meditation. I know a little more than I knew in those early years of total unconsciousness. But I certainly don't know how to travel through the ether and get to Virginia. I don't. But here is God saying to us in so many ways, find it in your own life. Just be willing to work for it. Because I know, and you know, that even sitting down at an altar for 5 minutes a day can feel like the hardest thing in the world. It can feel like it. But make some effort. Sit down. I love you, God. I love you. I know that you can appear in all of these ways. I know you're here. It's not about appearing. It's about moving into the realization of what we already are. It's about improving our knowing of our given divine state. That's all it's about. And it is so simple. You know, Swamiji, in one of his expanded comments on this reading, refers to the Gordian knot. Now, just to expose some of my ignorance, I thought, I know what the Gordian knot means, but where did it come from? I had no idea, so I looked it up last night. And, you know, it's in Greek mythology, of course, about Alexander the Great, who was told, whoever can untie this knot will become the next king, the next ruler. And many people had tried before him. Nobody could untie the knot. And he tried, and he couldn't untie the knot. And then it comes to him. Nobody said, how I have to get the knot untied. So he takes his sword. This is what reminded me of Jesus' saying, I come not to bring peace. I'm not here to just make it nice. Everything's fine, honey. Stay where you are. I'll take care of you. No, I'm handing you the sword of discretion, of discernment, the sword of power. And Alexander takes his sword and cuts right through the knot. The knot's gone. That's what we need to be doing. There's a great lesson in that. And undoubtedly, it will be hard. So we all just start simple. We all just open our hearts. We all just express in whatever way we can. You know, when we're teaching Raja Yoga again right now, and it's always a profound experience, always, over and over. There are people sitting in that class who've taken it 4 times. It's profound for them. It's profound for the new people. It's profound for us. But what is so thrilling to me is when 2 or 3 weeks in, somebody comes, and inevitably somebody does. They've walked in the door. They know nothing. They have no idea what Raja Yoga is, why they're there. They have their reasons. And then they say to one of us, I can't believe this. I'm already getting along with somebody at work that I couldn't get along with. Or suddenly my children are listening to me. Or, and. It doesn't take much. You don't even have to feel like you want to be totally free. It's okay if you don't. If you just want to feel a little more peace, a little more calmness, a little more love for each other, a little less fearful, a little less feeling like you're driven by things that you know nothing about, but that aren't taking where you want to go in the world. Or you want to love more. You do want to be freer. You actually want to get free in this life. Whatever it is, the simple act of opening our hearts to him so that he can enter and take charge of our lives. When the disciple is ready, the guru appears. And it's so easy to say to God, I'm ready. It's so utterly simple to take that first step and then stick with it. 5 minutes a day or a pronam at the altar. In this autobiography of Yogi, I'll close with this. I read some of this chapter last week because maybe because I was suddenly having experiences where I felt connected to it in a way that I never could before, the experience in cosmic consciousness. But this is how Yogananda writes this. He says, by daily stilling my thoughts, I could win release from the delusive conviction. This is Yogananda speaking. He's saying, I did this. The delusive conviction that my body was a mass of flesh and bones traversing the hard soil of matter, breath and the restless mind. Everybody in this room can relate to the restless mind. I saw were like storms which lashed the ocean of light, the infinite ocean of divine light he's talking about. It's like taking the sun and its rays that are coming down and twisting them and turning them, running them through prisms so dark that the sun can't shine. This is what he's talking about. Breath and restless mind lash the ocean of light into waves of material form, because that's what material form is. It's that divine vibration that's whipped into this delusion that we see. Earth, sky, human beings, animals, birds, trees, he lists it all. No perception of the infinite as one light could be had except by calming those storms. It's so fascinating what he says. He writes more, but he says it right there. No perception of the infinite one light could be had in any other way. We say it every week, oh, waves that we are on the bosom of the infinite sea. We've been whipped into being those waves. Joyfully, together, let us celebrate our own greater reality. That means being one with the ocean. And they say, for now, by God's grace, our redemption is at hand. Swamiji wrote those words, and a few lines later, into our hands have been delivered the sacred keys of awakening. Yogananda's mission, one part of it. These beautiful practices. There were more he came to teach us about spiritual colonies and spreading them around. He came to show us that we're all one. He came to show us that we could have scientific proof of that, which he's certainly done in the last few years. Look at the science behind meditation. But these sacred keys of awakening, meditation, Kriya Yoga, really, listen to these words and ask yourself, what can I do to take my next step towards the realization of that divine consciousness dwelling at the heart of all creation so that I too can live in Christ consciousness? I am that avatar. That's what Master came to show us. That's what they all do. As Swamiji says, not how great they are, but how great we are. Show me the way. Next step. I'll put in my energy. I'll sit here and I'll do nothing but tell you how much I love you. That's all I can do. Knowing that you're there and you'll awaken in me.